We welcome into the studio both Brian Ray and Oliver Lieber of the Bayonets. Welcome, guys.
Hey, thanks, Sky. Good to be here.
Good to have you here. Before we start getting into all the side stories, how did you two guys actually meet and start to make music together?
That's a good question. We had a bunch of friends in common quite a while ago, and I think Oliver came up to me and said, did I hear you had written a song for Smokey Robinson? And now Oliver's been a songwriter for the last many, many years, producing and songwriting, so it was like really cool little recognition. And just, I think based on our songwriting, we got together to see if we could put something together, and here we are 15 years later still doing it and having fun.
See, exactly. See, what's funny, I like the way you handled it in the beginning of many years or a while. I instruct everyone of our peer group that don't walk up to me and say, well, how long have I known you now for? It's a while. It's just a while. We'll cut it off at a while.
Yeah, a while's good.
A while's good. That's a good number. Everyone gets the idea. So the band, as I understand it, the Bayonets, were going to be a one-off, and now it seems like a two-off and a three-off. What's inspired the? Is it just you guys feel good when you're making music together?
Well, certainly that's part of it. You know, the whole reason really to do this was to have some fun. You know, both of us have, you know, things we do.
Day jobs.
We have other musical day jobs. And I think this came out of a desire of both of us to just go in and not worry about, writing hits or catering to a certain format,
right,
and or any of that, and go in and sort of just have fun, like, you know, reconnect to the times when we were, you know, the reasons why we got into it in the first place. And that's been a great part of this band, has just been, being able to play music for music's sake and write what we feel and what seems honest for who we are at this point in our lives, you know?
Now, I've read, and when I read this comment, I've seen it in a couple of interviews. It's been invoked, and I always get excited because for me, it is a holy grail in my life. I've read that you guys, the idea of listening to a transistor radio in your bedroom really informs your sensibilities because it takes you back to that magical time as kids when, man, music just took hold of you. Do you hold the transistor radio in that high regard?
You know, it's true. I think I was about 5 or 6, and I got a transistor radio. Now I am aging myself.
That's okay.
But I got a transistor radio with that one earphone that I used to have back when I was 5 or 6. And I would take that thing to sleep with me because on very late at night was a pirate radio station coming out of Tijuana with 500,000 watts of power.
Well, it actually had 5,000, but legally it had 5,000, but it pumped out 500,000.
Well, that's what they said it had.
Sure.
Anyway, and he played this great rhythm and blues and, you know, black R&B and rock and roll and sort of the stuff that you didn't hear as much of on pop radio. And it was the great Wolfman Jack in his first gig. And I was taken. I heard his little wolf call in the middle of the night, and I was just like gone.
And and it's funny you talk about the one little earpiece. I managed up until second grade to pull off the play that I was hard of hearing, and that was a hearing aid.
Oh no!
And I remember Patty Devine. Patty Devine was the girl in class sitting next to me who ratted me out to Sister Michelle and said, he's not hard of hearing. He's listening to a transistor radio.
Isn't that funny? You never forget those names.
Patty Devine, wherever you are,
forever. Yeah.
Scourge on her.
Oh, man.
That's funny.
Now, we'll touch upon your day jobs and your history because you guys have done a few things. Brian has been playing a long time with both Etta James and, of course, now what? Has it been 11 years with Paul McCartney?
It's now 12.
12.
Yeah.
And we just, Paul called in, as you know, a few weeks back, and we talked about this, and it was almost like in his head he came to the realization as we discussed it how this band has been the band he's played with the longest in his life and, you know, feels such a camaraderie with that it's a real tremendous experience for him that I think it's settling in on him. I love this band.
You know, what a trip, right? I mean, who would have thought it? You know, I'm from Glendale. Like, how do you end up playing with Paul McCartney when you're born and raised in Glendale. But, you know, here I am 12 years later, and I couldn't be more honored or privileged to hang out with him. He's an inspiring cat. He's very good to us. He's a total blast. He likes to have a laugh. He's thoughtful, and the band's crazy good. So it's just really joyous experience. He's very free, and he never holds back. You know, we could be playing Fargo, or we could be playing, you know, the White House, and he's going to put out 100%, you know, and he's just really inspiring in that way.
He seems to be confident enough that your first gig with him, there wasn't a whole lot of, well, I'm going to, you know, play 20 times and gain his approval. Basically, as I understand it, you got flown into New Orleans and they said the Super Bowl stage is up there, go out and play. Was that true?
Basically, yeah. My audition was one song at the pregame, kind of one song pregame at the 2002 Super Bowl. That was my audition, right? Yeah.
How did you come on.
And no. And
were you wearing Depends?
I was. Yeah, I've got an endorsement deal for that one. No, but at the end of the show, I thought, okay, I better go thank him because I'll probably never see him again. And that's when he said, well, you know, stick with Abe and Rusty. They'll show you the ropes. I'll see you in 5 weeks for rehearsals. I mean, that's how it happened.
And you're going, wait, is he, what?
I literally turned to Abe and said, dude, is that what he really said?
Yeah. And did he mean it? And now 12 years later, apparently he did.
Apparently so.
Now, Oliver, you've seen a lot, been a lot, done a lot. You've done a lot of producing, a lot of songwriting. You've had a lot of hits. You've played in a lot of bands. And, you know, you've been around a guy who wrote a few songs in his day in your father.
Yeah.
I know a few artists who have fathers or mothers that have been iconic songwriters or performers. Did you get the sense, you know, were you encouraged, inspired? Did you want to? Was there encouragement? Did your father teach you some of the mechanics of songwriting, or did you just decide to do it all on your own? Was it intimidating having a father of that stature?
Well, first of all, you know, anyone's father is just their father.
Right.
So I never viewed him the way the world probably views him or the music industry. He was my dad.
Right.
So there was never any intimidation there. I never, you know, he never sat me on his knee and said, son, here's how you turn a phrase, or, you know, here's how you construct a pop song. It was an apprenticeship that I suppose started when I was a little boy.
You didn't really realize what you were witnessing and him feeling.
I didn't realize that I was getting a kind of apprenticeship that was very unique and, you know, that a lot of people didn't have. You know, if I wanted to spend time with my dad, I had to go to the recording studio, basically sit on those couches that they used to have, you know, in front of the console and be very quiet. And I don't know that I ever thought about being anything else in my life. I think at 8 years old, I got a drum kit from Manny's, you know, music in New York, and I was off and running. And
it seemed natural to you because you're in a studio where music is being made, literally created.
Yeah.
And so it just seems like, well, yeah, okay. What else have I seen, you know, work-wise being done? Make music.
Yeah, I mean, you know, if I woke up at night, or somehow I was waking up a lot, you know, when I was a kid at night, and I'd walk in the front, and my dad would always be at his desk, Hennessy brandy, and a yellow legal pad, and a bunch of sharpened number two pencils, and he would sit there in camel straights, and he would be sitting there in quiet, writing and working on lyrics, you know. And occasionally during the day or the next day, I kind of sneak back and I'd look at what he was working on. And in retrospect, some of them turned out to be some pretty big songs. But I just saw when you witness something, the process of something, I think something goes off in you unconsciously where you kind of just go, I can do that. There's nothing mysterious about this. I've watched it being done my whole life. So it's really been a very organic process.
Yeah, it comes natural because you weren't being set there. And that's more or less the question of, it wasn't like you were being formally apprenticed, where you might feel some pressure. It was like, okay,
I would have rebelled, sure you would. I guarantee you. Yeah, and in fact, I really didn't want to ever be a writer or producer. You know, my dad and Mike would go to the Brill Building, you know, and they'd be wearing suits and ties.
Oh.
And so to me, that was way uncool. You know, I was looking at the album cover, you know, the Beatles, the Stones, Creedence Clearwater, The Who, all of that. And these guys were, you know, they were dressing, you know, it was Carnaby Street. And
white Levi's were what you wanted to have on back then.
I wanted no part of that. I thought they were kind of, you know, they looked like lawyers to me. So I associated writing and producing. And it was really later on in life, somehow it snuck up on me. I wasn't shooting to be that. I always just wanted to play drums in a rock band. Funnily enough, I really did, you know, I did it in high school, and I really... You know, my career took a turn. I ended up being a guitar player for a bunch of well-known people. Somehow that happened. And this is kind of the first time since I was in my teens that I'm back to being a drummer in a rock band, which is kind of great.
And we can bear witness to that, even though you didn't bring drums today, when you guys were warming up, you were keeping meter with your left foot. And we can attest that you keep good time, and man, you wear out a lot of left shoes.
Let's hope that's not the loudest thing you hear when we play today.
Well, on that, a perfect cue for, why don't you play a song for us, and we can hear you guys in the live and acoustic setting.
Oh, thanks a lot, man. Yeah, we're going to just play just a verse and a chorus or two of our latest single that you just played called Crash Boom Bang. It goes a little something like this. One, two, two, dear. She calls me Sugar Daddy, 'cause she's my little girl. My one-way rocket ride, straight out of this world. Her motor's running all day, all night long. No way to turn her off, and that's what turns me on. She don't go slow, she's off, go no, no. Try to hold her down. She goes, no, no, no. She's all crash, boom, bang. Yeah, it's just a thing. She's a runaway roller coaster hurricane. She's all crash, boom, bang. The way her back door swings, she make a big bass drum go boom, boom, boom at my guitar twang. Crash, boom, bang. She got a jukebox rocket in her Airstream double wide. She's so hot, I blow my top morning, noon, and night. I can see the road sign, danger straight ahead. If I was smart, I'd turn around, but I'm going there instead. She don't go slow, she's out, go, go, go. And if you try to hold her down, she goes no, no, no. She's out, crash, boom, babe. Yeah, it's just a thing. She's a runaway roller coaster hurricane. She's out, crash, boom, babe. The way her back door swing, she make a big swing. Crash, boom, bang.
That was pretty good. That was pretty good for, you said you were going to do like one verse, one chorus, but I think you played more. I'm not real good at math, but I think you did.
We did two choruses.
All right, well, that was good. That was good. We're live on 88.5 KCSN. The Bayonets are here, and that, of course, being Brian Ray and Oliver Lieber. The next song that I'm going to play off a record, we're tying right back to that love of the transistor radio and how it instilled a certain commitment to music in us. It still resonates in our hearts and minds because one of your big early supporters was Little Steven, who heard the song and played it and championed it on his underground show, The Underground Garage. Have you gotten to talk to Little Steven about it? Has there been any sort of camaraderie raise up since then?
Yeah, quite a bit. Yeah, I invited him to one of Paul's shows out in Brooklyn, and And
he said, well, why don't you invite me to one in Jersey?
Exactly. And it was just a good, good time. You know, we're so lucky that the night we released it, which was Valentine's Day night, his wife, Maureen Van Zandt, saw it posted on Twitter and played it for him that night. And he had an edit for us and a whole bunch of questions for us that night. So he was wild about it and committed to giving us sort of the dubbing it the coolest song in the world, which is, you know, a big deal. And then he went on to do that three more times. So, you know, we're some lucky guys. Yeah,
absolutely. I mean, he really championed us. And to some extent, I think our decision to keep on going, you know, has, I mean, that's really affected it. Because he's been supporting us.
Well, you guys said that you got together because you have learned and deal with the expectations of success, the expectations of the industry, and the fact that, you know, you play big, big shows. There's big, big responsibility, but you all got into it because of the love, that love that you have as an early teen, that it just now it allows you to get back, pardon the pun, get back to those roots. And he's a guy who continually wants to revive that sense of spirit in everyone. He's an evangelist for that idea.
He's an evangelist, it's true. And I recognize in him something that I think is true of me and of Oliver, and that is that I still have the exact same passion and fever for music that I did when I was 3 and 4 years old, discovering Elvis, Chuck Berry, Little Richard, the Everlys. I was just nuts about it. There was nothing else I cared about, and he's that way. And he's a curator. I mean, he's so curious, and he's so into music. It's infectious. You listen to him, and you just go like, wow.
Well, let's share that song that he has shared and that we have shared before. We're going to play one off the record now from the Bayonets. This goes back one or two for Smartphone. It's 88.5 KCSN. We'll pick it back up with the Bayonets next after we listen to this.
Down.
It's 88.5 KCSN. That is Smartphone from the Bayonets, who've been our guests this afternoon. Now, we've whetted everybody's appetite for the new record, and we've gotten everyone excited about the Bayonets. And, Brian, you know, you're, like, going to go do something with that guy Paul McCartney for 6 weeks. So we have to wait till you get back into your Bayonets job. But I guess, you know, well, you know, you got to do what you got to do, right?
Yeah, you do. And it's just a lot of fun to do. And it's great to be able to do both. Look, I mean, it's fun to hit the ground running when I get back to town on these breaks and, you know, get over with Oliver and start recording and writing or whatever process we're in at the time. And it's just a really full life. You know, I'm really enjoying the hell out of it.
Now, I have to ask the question because there was some concern. Paul's feeling okay? He's feeling better? He's over the sickness and everything?
Oh, yeah. You know, he's doing great. It's just a thing that could happen to anybody. Yeah. Just catch a bug, you know, and he caught a bug.
But not everybody has, like, a bunch of stadiums full of people waiting for him. That's, you know, when I get a bug, you know, I get two or three people here saying, are you coming in today? That's about all the grief I get. So.
I hear you.
It's a little different.
I hear you.
So you're when do, it starts pretty soon, right?
Yeah, I leave Thursday, and we're going to do a little rehearsing, and then we pick it up in Albany and finish out the summer as it had been planned before. And we've got a couple of dates to make up, and those are all posted online on Paul's site. And
right.
That's in October, and then some more Japanese stuff, I think, sometime maybe. I don't know. We'll see what's announced.
Well, you're going to also focus back on the Bayonets in the last week of July, the album slated for release then, and you're going to do a release party, and we're going to let everyone know about that. So, Oliver, you know, basically, you can come out and hang with me, you know. Here.
Absolutely. Yeah.
We'll both get our left foot going in time together to songs.
It sounds like a party.
If nothing else,
yeah.
you know you got that.
Yeah.
You can come do that with me.
Thanks, guy.
But so what is that, about 6 weeks? Six weeks, and then we're going to get official into the new record.
Yeah. I guess end of July, around the 27th, we'll be releasing it on Robo Records, Universal. And, yeah, five new cuts and five that we released last year, but were never, you know, released on a physical form. Those were all just digital singles.
Right.
So here we are, yeah.
Well, it's good to have you here, and we appreciate it. We certainly share that holy grail of the transistor radio, that what you were talking about. You know, it's been a while, but the passion never wanes here at KCSN, and we loved sharing your spirit today with our audience. So thanks for coming out today.
Thanks for having us. Yeah, it's been a blast.
It's the Bayonets, and it's live right here on 88.5 KCSN.